I'm very happy to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Leslie Harrell Dillon. She is writer and performer of the one-woman show The Passions of Mabel Dodge Lujan, and we're joined by Kent Kirkpatrick, director of the show that opens on August 6th at the Santa Fe Playhouse. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So, who was Mabel Dodge Lujan? You are basically acting as her in this one-woman show. She's a little hard to describe in a few words, which is maybe why you have to do a whole show about her.
Yes, exactly. She was a mover and shaker in the early part of the 20th century and had a salon of sorts in Florence as well as in New York. She was one of the creators of the Armory Show. She worked with John Reed, who later became her lover, on the Patterson Strike pageant, which was the first pageant to be presented at Madison Square Garden. Then when she came to Taos, she brought the likes of D.H. Lawrence, Georgia O'Keeffe, Willa Cather, many painters, artists, to Taos because she felt it was such a center for creativity and wanted to support these artists in their work and hopefully be inspired by the countryside that so moved her and changed her life. So that's very much in a nutshell. Who she is.
She really, I mean, her claim to fame in a way is bringing other people together.
Yes. She was an entrepreneur of culture and of people and wanting to bring out the best in them. For instance, her third husband, Maurice Stern, was a painter when she met him, but she knew and saw from some sculpture that he had done that that's really what his calling was. He was a better sculptor than painter, so she worked very hard to bring that out in him and eventually succeeded in a peculiar way. But, yes, she wanted to bring people together to help create more understanding in the political arena, and certainly culturally, she felt by bringing different kinds of artists together. It's like those retreats that they have back east, you know, the McDowell Center,
artist colonies.
Yeah. That's really what she was creating in Taos, and she had the land and the facilities to put these people up, and people would meet at dinner. And it really was, I would say, one of the first artist colonies. And so she was very forward-thinking in that way. The other big thing that she did, which speaks to us today, the memoir, you know, is a very popular form now in literature. Everybody's coming out with their memoirs. Well, Mabel came out with hers in the 1930s at a time when people were not doing that at all, and especially women. And she was very forward-thinking and very frank and honest about her life and the things that she was doing and thinking sexually, politically, emotionally. She just really put it out there. And that's why when I was creating this piece in the 90s that I wanted to use all of her words. I wanted her to speak, not Leslie giving you a little, you know, bio show about who Mabel Dodge was, but to allow her to speak.
And so you went to her writings, which must have been a massive job,
yes,
and pulled out enough to make a kind of, 80-minute or so show.
Exactly.
And, I mean, how did you, it's so much, like, editing that down is like the ultimate editing job.
It was sort of horrifying because I had not graduated from college at that time, and so I didn't.
It has nothing to do with it.
Oh, it's like I'd never done a research paper. I go in the Beinecke Library, and I'm like, what? What do I do here? You know, and somebody's sitting next to me with a Gutenberg Bible, and, you know, and here I am with 1,500 pounds of Mabel's papers, and I'm like...
1,500, we're not, 15, it's not 1,500 pages, it's 1,500
no, pounds. She had, you know, dozens and dozens of scrapbooks. She had saved everything. She had all these articles she'd written for the Hearst newspaper. She had essays, and of course her books, and the books that were closed. closed to us in the mid-90s that did not open this material until the year 2000. Anyway, the only way I could do it was to sort of have my own emotional response to everything I was reading and go, ooh, I like this part. I'd put it down. Ooh, I like this part. This speaks to me. This speaks to me. So how was Mabel speaking to me? And the key piece that I found, and this was 20 years ago, when I was 48, was this essay she'd written on menopause. Well, it was written in the early 30s. Nobody ever used that word menopause. Eek! And so it was very much about women finding their spirit, finding the fire within them. And I thought this spoke to both men and women. And that became a kind of lodestone for how I created the piece around that and obviously following stuff of her life.
One thing you've said about this piece, which I thought was interesting, is if you had 10 different performers doing Mabel, you'd get 10 different pieces because there's so much to work with.
Yes.
And so in a funny way, even though it's about her, it has a little bit of that reflection of you in it.
Absolutely. Yep.
I say that it's a conversation between Leslie and Mabel.
Oh, that's a really interesting way of looking at
it. You know, even though, I mean, we're not doing that in the performance, in the show, it truly is sort of from a meta level. It's a conversation between Leslie Harold Dillon and Mabel Dodge Lujan. And it's very interesting to see what Mabel says through Leslie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have to say, I mean, I don't know how I feel about her. She's really not necessarily a likable character. And it's also interesting because I saw this, you did this play in the 90s, and I was brand new in Santa Fe, and I saw it and was very moved by it. And I felt like, because I was new to this area, and I felt like you were kind of channeling this woman and that she was so charismatic and so fascinating. And now, and it's like going back to a book that you read 20 years ago and you're reading it again. Seeing it again, I was like, I don't know about this. I mean, her moral compass is so utterly unstable. I mean, she's into the unions, and that. But it's like she's got a lover dude who's in the unions, and as soon as that's done, her interest in that cause is finished. And it's sort of like the things that she believes deeply in. I mean, I don't know if you could really say this, but it seems to have a lot to do with the people who she is enamored of at that time.
Well, I think that played a part in it because that was her understanding. You have to she grew up at a particular time, and in a way, that's how you access that world, or that was her way to open a door. But I think,
and make a difference.
And make a difference.
Yeah.
And yes, through these emotional connections to the men, but they weren't the men, except for perhaps John Reed and then later Tony Lujan. It wasn't the men themselves. They were simply a way to open the door. And it was a way she understood in herself that she could do this. And, you know, she wasn't independently creative. She didn't have a calling as such as an artist like Georgia O'Keeffe or Willa Cather did. But she did have a calling spiritually, and I feel part of it was to experience as much of life and living as she could. And boy, did she. She was brave. She was outspoken. And she did things at a time when women were not doing them. I mean, one of the great Marie Howe, who was a tremendous suffragette, came and talked to her and said, oh, you know, she was very disappointed that Mabel had married after having lived openly with John Reed, that she was disappointing women who were trying to break new bounds. And so, you know, it's an interesting, yes, back and forth, which I think is very human. And it's interesting you say about not liking Mabel, is that I realized this morning, taking a little shower and thinking about Mabel, is that I don't always like her either. But I love her like an old friend that makes me crazy, that I grew up with. And I love this woman, but she does terrible things and says awful things sometimes. But I realize that's who she is, and I still love her. And I feel that way about Mabel. Sometimes I don't like the things she says or does, but I feel a very a closeness with her, a spiritual closeness, if you will, creative. she changed my life in the 90s. Can't.
I find her fascinating. I find her fascinating. Working on this rehearsal for the last month, maybe, yep, that we've been working, as I've gotten to know the script better and Leslie and I have gone deeper and deeper into it, I find her fascinating, especially when you consider the period. You know, she moved to Taos in 1919. So most of her wild life was pre-1919. Once she got to Taos, she settled down with Tony Lujan and had a pretty conventional life other than running this artist colony / salon in her home. And she really is, to me, very inspiring just in her courage, in how she broke the mold, her iconoclastic approach to life, and kind of, you know, this is maybe what we react negatively to, is her selfishness. You know, she was very selfish. She wanted what she wanted, and she went for it, regardless of the consequences.
Right.
And there's something about that that I'm not that way, so I kind of admire it, or I'm inspired by it.
Well, and I think that people that, you know, strong creative artists, that's what you have to be. You have to be selfish.
Yeah.
And Mabel was an artist of people, of gathering, of trying to influence, of trying to offer up her life to be an inspiration to others. I mean, but yeah, you want power to change things. You have to be selfish. There it is.
And she's very polarizing. Leslie did a little preview short performance at the Mabel Dodge Lujan House about 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And it was a crowd of Taoseños. And even though there was no one there who actually knew Mabel, everyone knew Mabel secondhand, and they either loved her or hated her. So even now, 50 years after her death, she still divides the community in half.
Yeah, it is very interesting because it does bring up a kind of conversation about women and feminism.
Yes.
Because you can think of her as a kind of early, well, proto-feminist of one kind, in the sense that she really decided what she was going to do and did it when she wanted to and had her sexuality in her own hands. But the thing is, I mean, selfishness and hurting other people and having no regard for their feelings, just because women are trained not to do that, it makes it seem worse when they do that. But
exactly,
you know, but nobody should do that, male or female. And there she is. So you sort of don't know how to hold her.
But the balance of that is that she was extraordinarily generous with many people. Just, you know, couldn't be kinder and more generous. The author Frank Waters, I was fortunate enough to talk with him in the 90s, and he just couldn't, you know, sing her praises more fully when he first came to Taos, and she gave him furniture and a place to live and was supportive of him. And she did that for many, many people, and in many ways unsung. You know, there are many things that she did in Taos that and gave, you know, monetarily or in terms of time. And
well, she fought the Burson Bill, which is in the show,
right,
which, you know, protected the Indians, the Taos Indians.
I right.
mean, she worked tirelessly against the U.S. government
right.
to protect the Taos Indians.
She also married several different men who had syphilis, and this is part of the information that was buried for a long time.
Yes, it was. That was not open to the public until the year 2000, at which point Lois Rudnick, her biographer, had known that there were these papers, and so when it was released, she went in and created this wonderful book using some of the memoirs that Mabel had withheld until the year 2000 around the syphilis and various other things she didn't want published until long after everyone she was sure was dead.
And so that has become part of your
yes.
play, and that's one of the ways in which it's changed since
yeah.
since you did it the first time around.
Right.
What's it like to do it now all these years later, like for you as an artist, for you as an actress and a writer?
Well, it's wonderful to revisit, but I have discovered that I'm different. I've changed. I'm older. I'm not as facile, perhaps, as I used to be, but also because of my life experience has made me appreciate and understand some of the depth in Mabel that I didn't when I was younger. So the show, I would say, in a strange way, is a little darker for me. It's an exciting journey to go on, and I hope, you know, bringing the audience along with me. But it has a resonance and a darkness to it, which is powerful and which I relate to, and makes it perhaps a little more difficult to do and a little more vulnerable to do.
Very interesting.
I feel it's more grounded in Leslie.
Yeah.
I think Leslie's more grounded, and I think this, as she says, darker, but at the same time more real, more honest.
Right, right. And Kent's been a fabulous director. That's what you long for as both an actor and playwright, is to have a director who's sympathy toward that, but also knows how to guide without, you know, completely making me turn into a little puddle of screaming memes. So he's been a wonderful guide through this new territory, which is a little terrifying.
Why?
You know, it's when you're younger, getting up and doing solo, you feel brave and stuff. And I realized, thinking about it as I get closer to opening night, which will be very soon, is that I feel more vulnerable, maybe because I'm more vulnerable in life. I'm older and only have a couple of decades, God willing, left. And I don't feel like razzle-dazzle, woo-hoo. It's a strange moment in my life.
Yeah.
So having to revisit Mabel and rekindle my fire, as she hopes she can do in the show as well as for the audience, it's a moment for me personally to try and get brave again.
I was watching the rehearsal of it, and my feeling was, I was thinking of the play Death of a Salesman, whose last weekend is actually at the Playhouse this weekend, for people who haven't seen it yet. I'm not sure if there's still tickets, but I was thinking about the characters in that play, who are people who, especially in their time, were probably very real. I mean, you watch that play and you think, this is realistic post-war America, and these are people that you could have met on the street. But would you have wanted to know them? Would you have wanted to know Willie Loman? Like, would you invite him over for dinner, be your friend? You know, I feel the same way about Mabel Dodge-Lujan. Like, I'm not sure I would have wanted to know her, but what you've done is you've made her into a literary character. And you love watching Death of a Salesman because it's so real. And you love watching you because you have made Mabel real in a literary way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. We hope. That's certainly a goal for us, is to make her accessible. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, yeah, we go to Death of a Salesman to spend time with Willie Loman. We don't have to have him over for dinner. But we can spend time with him. Likewise, we spend time with Mabel and get to know her a little bit better without having to have coffee with her.
Yeah, and without having to experience, like, she, you know, that relationship, for example, with her last husband, Tony Lujan, the play really leaves you wondering, did she ruin his life? Or was he happy? Like, he basically took this Taos Pueblo man out of his life that he'd known nothing but that, and was happy and had a real position and was a strong person in his community, and she basically alienated him from that. And what is that? I mean, is that like the ultimate selfish act, or did he willingly love being with her? And you bring out some of that conflict in the play.
Right, and I think that he did, ultimately. I mean, they were very, very close, in spite of all the difficulties that they had. He was devoted to her, as she was to him. And, in fact, he, I think, died like less than a year after she did, you know, really of a broken heart. And he was, in her later years, she had a form of dementia, but he was always there for her. And I think that they were simply I don't think Mabel may imagine that she could make people do things. I don't think she could have made Tony Luan leave his people as he did if he hadn't felt that there was a reason that they were brought together, that he wanted to do that, and he was actually able to help the Pueblo, save Blue Lake, all of those things really through his relationship with Mabel. So I think that it was one of those meetings that is beyond sort of logical explanation, that these two people were brought together for a reason, and I think that he was a willing partner. He wasn't like she did this terrible thing to him. He was a very strong, strong person. And I know from, I'm part Cherokee and Chickasaw, and my grandfather and was a very, could be very silent like Tony, but very strong. So he wasn't a pushover at all.
Yeah.
It's great that you saw that in the rehearsal, because it is, he's her fourth husband, and in Leslie's show, you sort of see her growth through each of these men, how she grows and learns and changes. And he's the one that she truly loves the most. Mm-hmm. And as problematic as it was, as Leslie said, I think a very important relationship.
Right. But at the same time, I mean, she pays off his first wife, you know, and you do find yourself wondering, would you be doing this play? Would anybody ever have heard of her if she hadn't had gobs of money?
I would say that given who she was, I imagine she would have found a way to make a difference in spite of the money. She would have married money, as she did, obviously, with Edwin Dodge. And that's what, and women today do it. Let's not kid ourselves. If a woman is poor and wants to make a difference, she will go out and find someone, be it man or woman, to partner up with who has money that can enable her to do what she feels called to do. I mean, I think that, and that's, you know, as Mabel would say, it's a practical situation. I think it was helpful that she had some money of her own, and her mother, you know, gave her an allowance. But, yes, I really believe that she would have found a way to make a difference in spite of the money.
The one-woman show is called The Passions of Mabel Dodge Luhan. It's written and performed by Leslie Harold Dillon. And it's directly from the writings of Mabel Dodge Luhan, directed by Kent Kirkpatrick. It opens this coming Thursday, the 6th of August, and runs through the 16th of August at the Santa Fe Playhouse. The performances are Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30 and Sundays at 2. For more information and tickets, you can go to santafeplayhouse.org. You can also call 988-4262. I want to thank you so much, both of you, Leslie and Kent, for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. It was great.
Great conversation.